This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
All right, we're going to switch our attention to baseball, and making his debut on Packer and Durham would be Gabby Sanchez, who was witnessing what was a crazy, crazy morning in Columbia, South Carolina yesterday as a Virginia and Old Dominion tried to figure out, all right, which one of you guys want to go to the Super Regional? And Gabby, I got to tell you something. From the seventh inning on yesterday, I wasn't sure if either one knew how to win the game. It was back and forth and crazy wild pitches. And I mean, I didn't know what was going to happen. It was just a nutty game. But at the end, Virginia loved it because they walked it off.
It was just a crazy night. It kept going back and forth. And you're right. All of a sudden, Virginia gets the lead. All of a sudden, Dominion gets it back. And then Dominion gets the lead. And you think, okay, they're going to close it down. They got their closer on the mound. And then couple hits, a walk, guys get on base, two wild pitches in a row, they tie the ball game up, and you're thinking this one might go a long, long time. But then Devin Ortiz, the guy who started the game on the mound, he comes up big, ends up getting that walk off in the 10th.
And that's what I'm curious about, Gabby, a guy like Devin Ortiz, who there's not any film on him as that pitcher because of how little he had thrown this season. I believe only two innings leading up to that. Spent the season as DH, showed why in the end game heroics. Is that beneficial to a team like Virginia because ODU has no idea what's coming at them, or is that kind of the norm in baseball in terms of film and prep?
Listen, Brian O'Connor had some magic wand going on with all his pitching staff. It was incredible the way that he was able to, one, get guys who really hadn't pitched well the whole entire season come out and start throwing the ball really, really well. You got guys like Griff McGarry, who walked a whole bunch of guys the whole entire year. He comes out a couple games ago, striking out eight. You get guys like Brandon Neek, who comes out of the pen, had 2 1/3 innings the whole entire year. That's the most he ever had thrown since high school. He goes 5, striking out 16. They had 24 strikeouts in a 27 game the game prior against Old Dominion. And then all of a sudden, he's looking at his pitching staff going, okay, who am I going to throw? I don't really have another guy to be able to throw out there. Hey, Devin, I know that I've been asking you to, you know, DH and hit. How about you go out there and pitch? And then he goes out and throws a shutout when he goes out there to pitch. And then, of course, you have Steven Shaw come in, who's throwing 90 pitches as their closer to close out a ball game, and his heroics. And one of the best probably interview I've ever seen in my life where we had with him. It was just an amazing run for Virginia. And when you have a run like that, you don't want to face that team in a super regional. That's for sure.
By the way, Devin Ortiz will join us tomorrow on Packer and Durham. You mentioned Steven Shock, who, number one, is a great interview. We've had him on the show here, too, and he's just tremendous. But the effort he had yesterday, knowing that could very well be his last game. I know you guys emphasize that. But when you get a guy who's a six-year senior, if you will, and here he is pitching in a game 7. You just realize, hey, whatever it takes, man, let's go get it done. 75 pitches yesterday. He gives up the lead in the 8th, gets the win at the end. But he's been a great story. But, you know, Virginia just kind of found a way, though, didn't they, Gabby? And, you know, you mentioned the two wild pitches that Old Dominion threw back to back. Those weren't just, hey, the catcher missed it. That looked like Bull Durham wild, Mark Packer on the mound wild pitches. Those things were 15 feet over the catcher's head, and whatever crowd was there was scattering, thinking that ball was coming through the net. I mean, it was just kind of a surreal 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th innings yesterday in Columbia.
Yeah, you're right. That Nuke Lelouch definitely was on the mound at that point. Right. And it was crazy because he was just spotting the whole entire time prior to that. It wasn't that he was erratic the whole entire time and, hey, that ball just got away. He was dotting down low with the fastball, throwing it 94, 96 miles an hour. And you're thinking, okay, it's going to be tough right now for Virginia to get out of this. This guy's on fire. He's pitching good. And then a couple hits, get some pressure on. And for some reason, I don't know what or how, but he started to think about it. And it was Noah Dean, and he's on the mound. And you can just see the breath start to come. And he's just thinking too much. And one pitch gets thrown. And as soon as he threw that first one up across the net, you went, uh-oh, what's going on here? And then the next pitch, he took like 4 or 5 extra deep breaths. And you're going, oh, this ain't going to be good for him. He's thinking way too much about this one. And I mean, the next one was even higher up on the screen. And I was thinking, you got to go get him, because if not, they're going to lose this ball game right now, because he's going to throw another one up there. It was just a crazy way that the game of baseball turned in a matter of two pitches. Really,
sure did. Really did. So true.
Yeah, and so, Pack, I've waited 7 minutes into the interview with our guy Gabby here. Can I talk? Can I get to Notre Dame a little bit?
Go ahead. Go for it.
Have we covered?
Get the pom. Listen, get the pom poms out. I mean, Virginia does not have to leave town. They get to stay in Columbia, South Carolina. I mean, they eliminate the Gamecocks, so you got that whole fan base mad at Virginia. And now Virginia still has to stay in Columbia for another week and get ready for Dallas Baptist. But we've done the Hoos. So Jordan's ready to go with his alma mater. He's got the pom-poms out and a round-trip ticket to Stark Vegas.
Gabby, I'm a Notre Dame alum, if you can't tell. How do you know somebody's a Notre Dame alum? They tell you in the first couple minutes of talking to them. They're obnoxious like that. I want to ask you about this baseball team, because when I was at Notre Dame from 01 to 05, they had some really good teams. Coach Paul Maneri was the guy there. He's in his final season now at LSU. They, too, are headed to a super regional, so it all kind of comes full circle here. But 50 runs in your regional in your backyard, the atmosphere was electric there in South Bend. Nico Cavadas is just dropping bomb after bomb, stumbling into the tournament, has been electric like the rest of the offense. What does this team look like now traveling on the road? Do you still remain confident they can continue at somewhat of the ridiculous clip they're at?
You know what? Sometimes you get that little chip on your shoulder and you get a little bit upset as a team, because you feel like you should and deserved a spot to be able to be that team that gets that one of the top eight seeds, especially being the top team in the ACC. And you just go out there and you just put a pounding on every single team that you play. Nico Cavadas goes out there and just was on fire, torching balls. And Lean Jarrett, what he has been able to do with this team, you look at what happened a couple of years ago coming in, team was last in defense, and all of a sudden the turnaround that he's been able to make, and the biggest thing has been, hey, getting back to basics, pitching and defense. That's exactly what they've done. And everybody always talks about it. Who wins championships? Pitching and defense. Yeah, you win games with hitting, but pitching and defense is what's going to carry you to get that title. And this team right now, not only are they pitching, not only are they playing good defense, but they're raking too. So you put all of that together, that's a dangerous, dangerous team.
They've also been the ACC's most consistent team. And, you know, Virginia and NC State are hot, which we obviously talked about. Virginia, we'll get to NC State in a minute. They're hot at the right time, which is really important. But as far as in and out, the most consistent team in baseball in this conference this year, it was a team that was picked dead last before the season started in the Atlantic Division, and it's Notre Dame. And I think Link Jarrett feels really confident about his guys. They've got experience. They play the right way. And I don't think they'll be in awe when they go down to Mississippi State, which has got one of the best home field advantages, not to mention teams in the country. It's a great, great matchup.
It is. It's going to be a very good matchup. But I still can't take away from a team right now that plays really good defense. They've got, for me, basically starters. It's not really starting pitcher. They have starters. They've got 9-10 guys who have started this year. They can go out there. Link Jarrett can go and pick and choose. Hey, this guy's not throwing the ball really well. I don't like the way that it's going. He can just go out there and get somebody else to come back in. And when you have that kind of depth in your roster where you're able to just completely just come in and get guys who you know is going to give you length in the game, that's a dangerous team to have, let alone not making many mistakes on the field. So 27 up, 27 down, that's what they're going to give you. They're not going to give you those extra outs with making errors. So it's a very dangerous team. I'm having to bet that Notre Dame is going to take that one, even though it is going to be a tough one with Mississippi State.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm saying it. So what?
Like, Gabby's
like
on.
Kirk Gibson rounding second base, baby. The fist pump.
No, don't do a Dodger. Listen, don't do a Dodger reference. That's 1988. It's 88 you're talking about. Listen, you're a baseball guy, George. You got to come in stronger than Kirk Gibson. As a Giants fan, I'm not going to allow a Kirk Gibson reference and doing that nonsense.
My bad.
I'll bring this out right here and just say, hey, best record in best record in baseball. And put an end to that nonsense right now.
So, My apologies to you, Pack. Gabby, trying to get this rig back on the road. The Pack are a team that are very hot. They're also a team that has to go into their opponent's backyard in that Super Regional in Fayetteville with Arkansas in front of them. How does their path look in terms of trying to get to Omaha like the rest of these other two ACC teams?
When we talk about NC State, yeah, they're going to play against the number one team in the country, a team that I think up and down their lineup, their pitching staff, just they're tough. They're a very tough team. But NC State, when you look at them and when you talk to, you know, scouts and coaches, they probably up and down their lineup have the most studs on their team, guys who can just do it all. They have a really good pitching staff. Tyler McDonough has had a heck of a season. Tatum, you know, Murr, Butler, like all these guys, they can swing the bat. They had a tough, you know, ACC tournament when they lost to Duke. They didn't tag up from third base, and that, you know, kind of hurt them a lot. But then they go on to regionals. They were able to, you know, get the wins moving on. It's just a dangerous team. This is going to be a fun super regional for NC State to have. And if they're able to, you know, beat Arkansas, that's huge.
Here's the other thing. I think NC State benefited by playing in Ruston, Louisiana in their regional because great fan base, rowdy bunch. They had to beat the number one seeded team in that region, and they swept them. So, again, you go to Fayetteville, great fans. I'm not good, great environment. They've got the number one team. We've pointed out before that the number one national seed has not won the College World Series since 1999. So Arkansas's got the burden where, hey, tag, you're it. You got to go defend it because everybody expects you to, number one, be in Omaha and win it all. I think the fact that Nebraska pushed them, Gabby, is probably a good sign for NC State in terms of, hey, you know, people just didn't go in there and get buzzsawed. Hey, they beat Arkansas and had them down 2-0 in Game 7 until Welsh comes in and hits the grand slam and the bomb in the eighth inning. But great fans. Dave Van Horn's did an incredible job. They are the number one team in baseball. Make no mistake, that is the best team in college baseball. So NC State has their hands full, but you know what? They're not on the couch. They're playing their best baseball, and they've already seen a raucous crowd on the road and having to beat somebody twice. So all that, I think, helped Elliott Avent's guys as they get ready with what they're going to see in Fayetteville this week.
Yeah, with Elliott Avent and what he has done, listen, it's a three-game series and anything can happen. And this team can beat any team in a three-game set. I don't care who they are. They've got good players. They've got good pitching. They've got a good bullpen. And when you have those three, you put yourself in a position to be able to win. And, yes, Arkansas is a good team. They're very good up and down, too. But you look at a team like, even like, let's say, an Old Dominion coming into the NCAA tournament, who was number eight with their offense, who had the most home runs in baseball, and they did not hit in that regional. So anything could happen in a three-game set where guys just aren't hitting, the pitching might not be able to get it done, and you move on. You still got to play a three-game set. You still have to go out there and play good baseball, and Arkansas just can't throw their glove out there and think that they're going to beat an NC State team because that's a good ball club that's going out there to be able to win some ball games.
And again, I'll emphasize, I think there's pressure on Arkansas to hold serve. Are they the most talented team? Yeah. I think they are. I think they're the best team in college baseball. But you know what? They especially after the way they lost the World Series a couple of years ago to Oregon State with a drop pop fly, that has been in the crawl of every Arkansas fan that I know, that is one, that's the woulda, coulda, shoulda. Shoulda won it all, but they didn't. And I think there's some unfinished business on their end, but when you've got the number one team, you're at home, you're expected to win. So we'll see if NC State can actually use that to their advantage. And if they can steal game one and put all the pressure in the world on the Hogs, we'll see how it plays out. Nebraska almost pulled that off this week.
And that's the thing. When you have that number one next to your name, you've got that target on your back. And guys come out, and they're not playing below. They're having to play up to your level. Yeah. And when you get a team trying to play up to a level, you could be a dangerous ball club because if you're not on point, if you're not doing everything right, that other team is just going to pass you up, and you're going to end up losing a ball game. So you're right. Arkansas has that huge target on their back, being that number one seed, and they're going to have an NC State Wolfpack team that's going to be going out there, understanding the situation. And that's the biggest thing, where a team understands, hey, We can't mess up as a team. We need to get that extra gear. We need to steal those bases. We need to get those runners over. We need to get those runners in, playing for a huge purpose, knowing that if you make a mistake against Arkansas, you're going to be going home.
Amen to that. Well, listen, I'm glad you survived the wild pitches and the weather delays and everything else, because that Columbia Regional was nuts. But the Hoos don't mind spending some more time down there in Columbia SC. But we appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the baseball.
Thank you very much for having me. This was fun. Thank you, guys.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. Jordan filling in for Wes. He'll be back tomorrow. All right, college football making some news yesterday. There were multiple reports that next week the big boys are going to get together and talk about the future of the college football playoff. Now, I emphasized this yesterday on the radio. We're going to do the same thing on television. Nothing has been reported as far as fact as, hey, here is the direction. It's just conversations. And one of the conversations apparently is that the model of 12 teams, the playoff going from 4 to 12 teams, seems to be the quote-unquote leader in the clubhouse. Now, I will emphasize again, this has not been announced. It's not going to change overnight, regardless of what happens next week in Chicago. But it is being kicked around, Jordan. So with that said, your initial thoughts that if in case we go 4 to 12, do you like that direction or not?
I'm shocked that that would be the direction, if I'm being honest, Peck. Going to college basketball, my first love, went from 64, not to 128, not to 200-something. It went from 64 a field to a field of 68, and that's kind of where it's hovered around. I'd be surprised if you're going to make that mammoth of a jump. And I look at four, I thought it was going to be a conversation of 4 to 6, to be quite honest. Represent all Power Fives and leave one outside the Power Five to represent those that aren't in the Power Conferences. And I thought that would be the most logical sense. But clearly, the idea of the spectacle of this, the money to be had by this, let's make that thing as robust as possible that's still within reason, that doesn't make it too much tilted in favor of money as opposed to the well-being of the athletes. But 12 doesn't seem to satiate that. That seems a little bit far-fetched to me, and I'm stunned that that could be the front runner, if I'm being totally honest.
This, when I heard this yesterday, my initial thought was, well, that's interesting, because, number one, nothing gets done until something gets sold. That's number one, and that is true in any line of work.
You've always said that.
Hey, that's true in any line of work. Nobody's going to agree to anything until you can justify, well, if I do this, am I going to get paid more? The answer is, if it's yes, then we'll talk about it. So that's issue one. Issue two, you mentioned the well-being. Every time I have covered the college football playoff, when we get to the championship game and you're in the locker room afterwards, I have not been in a locker room yet where the exhaustion of the student athlete at the end of a championship season in football isn't being talked about by people. This is not the National Football League. It's a grind, though. And I know people go, man, we love football. Hey, I'm not talking about a fan's perspective. I'm talking about the student athlete's perspective. If you go from 4 to 12, whatever additional games are added here, and I'm assuming if you go 4 to 12, teams seeded 1, 2, 3, 4 would get a bye. You'd have 5 play 12, 6, 11, et cetera, and off to the races we go. All of that has to come into play. So that's why I'm saying you got to temper the conversation a little bit, because the smart people that are involved in college football who have been part of this working group, guys like Jack Swarbrick, et cetera, have to understand the balance of, number one, financially, does this make sense? Does this make sense for the student athlete in terms of their health and well-being? Does it make sense in terms of the academic world that everybody lives in? How is that going to be? There's a lot of layers to be discussed here. And when this working group mentioned that there were 63 potential scenarios that they were kicking around, it told me that this is what that told me. Regardless of what their final conclusion is, these are folks that are really spending quality time understanding we've got to make this right. And I think if you go from 4 to 12, Jordan, you better be really sure that that's right. Because I think once you go to 12, from a financial standpoint for all the conferences, from the student-athlete standpoint, I don't think you can go and say, hey, you know what? We bit off a little bit more than we can chew. It really should be 8.
Dial it back.
It's impossible to put the genie back in the bottle. And so that's why next week when everybody gets together in Chicago and they have real conversations about the future of the college football playoff, does it stay at 4? Does it move to whatever number you like, 6, 8, 12, 16, whatever you come up with? You've got to really be sure you know what you're talking about. And I have total faith that the people that are in charge with this working group and this management committee next week, I think they are the best people in college football. So I have faith that they're going to do the right thing, but it is going to be fascinating to see how this thing plays out. I am surprised the number is 12 that you hear about, because I really think the right number is 8, in my opinion. That's just me, but I'm not involved.
8, yeah.
I think 8's the right number.
Well, that's their first mistake, because you should be, my friend. You would add a lot of value, and I'm not being sarcastic.
I can bring donuts.
That's needed. That's a benefit.
I can do. I'm really, I am the best in the world. And hey, let me handle the desserts in that tray at the meeting. There's nobody in the world better than me at delivering that.
There'll always be a place on my committee for you. Pack, at the end of the day, I have to look at this and say, it has to do with the financials of college athletics, right? I mean, are they completely imploding? No, but are they in a bad spot given what's happened with COVID? Yes. And is this a massive bailout opportunity? That's what this is. Because I think in a normal world, no COVID, they go, 4, okay, PAC's idea of 8, yeah, we'll do that. 6, maybe that's the route. But you're not jumping to 12. This is a desperation move, in my opinion. And not completely desperate in the sense of we have no other option. It's a, did you see what went on and the financial hit we took these last 2 years? This could be a way to start to bring us back. Let's lean into the sport that has always taken care of us, that has always lifted up everything else, and let's do it again. To be honest, at the expense of the athlete. There's nobody outside of the athlete that's going to have issue with this. The reason why people love college basketball is there's a bracket. There's a tournament. It has that vibe. I don't care about the regular season, but I'll dial in for that. And so they're trying to capture that. Now, again, I think of comments like guys like Kirk Herbstreit made about it feeling like it's leaning towards a backloaded interest in the sport. Well, what do you think happens if you make 12 teams in that thing, Pac? I mean, you think people are going to care as much about the regular season in the beginning? And I'm not saying everybody feels this way.
I do.
But people started to identify that, yeah, I really only care about how do they get into the CFP. When they're out of that, who cares?
No.
You make it a 12-team field, those teams that drop out of it become that much more obsolete that much earlier with that much more runway in front of them to be obsolete. So it's something to think about.
I disagree with you there. And here's why. I think that if the college football playoff is expanded, the issue you have with 4 is that there's people that believe they have no shot of being a part of it before it gets started. And when you only have 4 spots, you have 5 power, 5 leagues, you got an issue. You got an issue before we get to the first kickoff. I think that if it expands to 8 or beyond, and it's included in the fact that, hey, a group of 5 thinks that, hey, you know what? For the best team in the group of 5, we're in the tournament. If I'm in the Pac-12 and I've basically been completely forgotten about, and it's structured in the fact that, hey, the Pac-12 champion is in, whoever it may be, however they determine it, it all of a sudden makes the regular season in that respective league important. So I think the expansion of the playoff actually enhances your regular season. And I know there's a lot of folks that totally
disagree. But you can do that with 6.
Whatever. I don't know what the right number is, whether it be 6, 8, 12.
Okay.
All I'm saying is the expansion of the playoff, I think if it's worded correctly and done right, I think you can now include everybody who believes they truly have a chance to be a part of the playoff. Now, does that change the fact that Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State could dominate it again and those are the best teams and we're going to end up with that? Hey, I don't know. That's why we play and keep score. But I have total trust with this working group. I do. I think they are the brightest minds in college sports, and I think they get it. Now, what they come up with next week in Chicago, we'll have to wait and see. But again, there were reports yesterday that really the number that seems to be the one that everybody likes is 12. And that did surprise me. But let's see what it is first before people go crazy. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Well, and I agree with you there. You do have to wait and see. But the tweet from Heather Dinich about 19 hours ago, a must follow at CFB Heather on Twitter, does a great job on TV with her articles. And again, on Twitter, she wrote, and this is important to note, remember the 11 university presidents and chancellors who compromise the CFP's board of managers have the ultimate authority to change the playoff. So they all have to agree before pushing it up the chain in Dallas on June 22nd. To get all those people and all those bright minds you're talking about mm-hmm. to agree on one single thing that serves some better than others,
yeah.
ultimately, yeah, money talks.
That's right.
But are you going to get all 11 to agree on something? We've
sure.
seen in college sports, that doesn't really happen.
Well, how do you think we went from the BCS to the college football playoff? Guess who all agreed to that?
Took a long time.
I didn't tell you this is going to happen overnight. I think it's inevitable. It's going to happen this decade. That I assure you. It's going to happen this decade. And I think if you end up showing all these smart folks, hey, guess what? Here's how we can make it work, and here's what it's going to mean from a financial standpoint, and we can justify the safety and health issues. Done. You wait and see. It'll happen that fast. And I believe that's going to happen.
I agree.
So keep your – listen, that's something to keep an eye on next week. That meeting takes place in Chicago at the end of next week. But it is a story that is brewing here for the next couple weeks and beyond. By the way, speaking of football
– 12 teams would be awesome. 12 teams would be freaking awesome. I'm not going to lie to you there. That kind of setup would be entertaining as all get out.
Well, it's football. And that's why football is different than hoops, because in this country – football is the 600-pound gorilla, and we're going to watch it on Sundays.
Yep.
We're going to watch it on Saturdays. So I don't want to hear people talk about, oh, I'm not interested in the regular season. Nonsense. You are absolutely interested in college football and the NFL, just the way it is.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
One of the cool stories coming up in college hoops will center around, speaking of New York life, Syracuse, New York. Jim Boeheim, the coach, been there for 100 years. And, of course, with all the doings with Roy Williams and Mike Krzyzewski, people are already talking about, well, you know, Larrañaga's 70 this and Boeheim's this. And Leonard, hey, guess what? He'll go out when he's ready to go out. But one of the cool stories about Syracuse, Jordan, is going to be not only Buddy Boeheim's return, because he had a phenomenal year, but here comes brother Jimmy into the mix. So it is a true Boeheim takeover, not only in college hoops, but also on Packer and Durham, because we got both brothers hanging out with us this morning. All right? And we lost Jimmy, apparently. But we do have Buddy, because he is a veteran of this.
Wow.
And we're going
to
find out.
He doesn't want to be bothered with baby brother.
I'm not surprised, man.
We're kidding around with you during the break, Buddy, about whether or not your brother's going to pass the audition. We're already having technical issues with him, so he's already in trouble. But first of all, how you doing? You feeling good? Life all right?
Yeah, everything's going great. Everyone's getting back right now, and it's exciting time. So we just got our first workout in as a team and played pickup. So it's a really exciting time right now. My brother's all moved in with us, and we got some great additions, and it's a great group of guys.
Well, Buddy, I think now's the time to talk trash before Big Bro gets on here. I mean, the guy's been at Cornell for all these years. Does he need to go back? He can't figure out how to get the connection going there. This is an awesome story. I mean, we had a chance to pop you guys up. We'll hopefully get Jimmy here. But you guys are two handsome guys, two great guys to follow, two heck of talents on the court, and now you join together. I had an older brother who played at Butler when I was at Notre Dame, and there was a time where he flirted with transferring to Notre Dame, and I thought, man, if my big brother comes here, he's going to take this place over, and I'm going to be baby brother all over again. Buddy, you're the man at Syracuse. How does this work out now that big brother's coming along, an immense talent in his own right?
Oh, I can't wait. I think it's going to be great. We had a chance to play in high school for a year, and that was a lot of fun. We kind of played off each other, and he's become a great player. I mean, he's grown up to 6'9". He's bigger, stronger. Cornell really helped him. I think that's going to be a great fit. And he's a great teammate, great person to have in the locker room. He's a fifth-year guy, so he's seen a lot. He has a lot of experience. And I think it will be a lot of fun. He's really matured, and he's really smart. That Cornell education definitely helps. And my dad will definitely get out during the year. makes a bad player turnover. He'll say, you know, you went to Cornell and this is what you're doing, something like that. But I'm excited. We're both really excited. And, you know, he's dreamed about playing here just like I have. So it will be a great experience.
Buddy, it was announced April the 16th that Jimmy was going to join the team. But when did you know? I mean, because I got to figure that the Boeheim family had a little heads up that this could potentially happen down the road. So when did you start hearing whispers that, hey, guess what? Big brother's going to join the team.
Yeah, his plan was always to stay at Cornell his whole career, just because they were really one of the few teams that to give him a spot and believe in him from the start out of high school, and really helped him a lot over the years, helped him grow to the player he is today. But I think once their season was canceled and it was kind of mid-season for us, early beginning of the year, he was at home working out, and you know he really had a big year last year, got a lot better this summer. I think we all were talking about it, and just, you know, the possibility with his fifth year to come here and play was big. And he had a lot of teammates, you know, from his class transfer out of there too. So I think that it was destined to be. And I think I've kind of started realizing mid-season this year that he was going to join us.
I think we got. Did we get Jimmy up here?
Yeah, here's Jimmy.
Now we got there Jimmy. He is.
There he is.
Buddy clipped the Wi-Fi in my room. He wants all the spotlight. He's not.
I love it.
I got to say number one here.
That's funny.
So that's kind of what we were talking about, Jimmy, before you joined us here is, you know, you're big brother. So naturally, baby brother follows big brother everywhere. But this is kind of a flip in the reversal of that. It's clearly Buddy's program because – he's been the star there for the last few years. You've been a star in your own right, but you're joining his team. So does Big Bro take a little bit of a backseat to kind of learn how things go there first? Or is it still, I'm Big Bro, you're following me along, buddy?
Nah, absolutely. I mean, he's been there. This is his fourth year now. Obviously, you know, see what he did last year and the years before. I mean, I'm the new guy again. So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to come in and learn and, you know, learn from him until I get the hang of it. And then hopefully, you know, I can help lead here and there. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I mean, it's his team. He's been there for 4 years. I'm just ready to come in and help out any way I can.
All right, Jimmy, I'm going to ask you, and the same thing for Buddy on the follow-up here. What's the one part of Buddy's game that you wish you had?
Not his jumping. We'll go definitely. I mean, yeah, he's the best shooter in the country. He's the best shooter in the country. So I'm going to go with that for sure.
All right, buddy, tag, you're it. What part of Jimmy's game do you wish you had in your repertoire?
Definitely not the hair. I'm going to go with I'll take his inside game. He's got a really good touch around the rim. He can use both hands. I mean, he shoots with his left hand, and he's righty, so that gives you an advantage right away. You can go either way. He's good with both hands. So I'd say his inside little touch. He's got a really good floater, good inside game.
All right.
I mean, Pac, I think you open up a can of worms here, Pac. I almost want to ask him, all right, what about the other's personality? But I don't want to start any brotherly wars here. Having two other brothers myself, I know how that can get. I don't want that here. I do think about my family because we were a basketball family, not to the level of you guys. I mean, you guys are basketball royalty, a beautiful family and an achieved one you guys have. And I think about if me and my older brother were able to play together, how many people would be so excited about that? Who was most excited when you guys got together? Was it coach, also father? I'm guessing it was probably moms, right?
Yeah,
definitely.
Easily.
It was her. Just a lot of friends that watched us grow up together and watch us battle over the years and play together. Our high school coach, a lot of family friends, childhood friends. So everyone's really excited, and it's great to see the support and excitement building around this.
All right, since Jordan will go personality, I will. I'm going to go right back to where I know that cause I already saw some love going back and forth there, which I love as a host. I'm going to go completely off the bar here. This is going to be just off the track. Jimmy, what was your first car? What was the first car your parents got you?
Toyota 4Runner.
All right. Buddy, how about you?
Shared a Mazda with my sister. Still have it, though. It's my car now. She got a new one. I kept it.
All right. So I was almost I was afraid that, buddy. Go ahead, Jimmy. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
you tell who the favorite is? They shared a couple.
Let's get to it. Who's the favorite?
Right here. Me.
Wait, does Jimmy agree with that? Is Buddy the favorite in the Boeheim family?
Maybe I give him my dad's favorite. I don't know about my mom. First of all, I already know.
Yeah, man. You know,
well, it's always most important to be mom's favorite.
It is.
Yeah, that's funny. Right.
So playing together, has there ever been any backyard fights between baby bro and big bro on the court? It's got to get fiery sometimes. Big bro wins those, right?
He did. Growing up, he did. He never let me win. We'd have my dad referee our games, and I'd just start yelling at him, going at him or something if he doesn't give me a call. But Jimmy would never let me win growing up. He was always bigger, and I would just – it would always be end in tears or a fight. And, I mean, that helped me in the end. It just made me want to get better to beat him one day. So we try not to play one-on-one as much anymore because it's just – it still is the same way. And especially as a teammate now, you can't be doing that. So growing up, though, it was a battle every day. It didn't matter what it was, not even just basketball, board games, anything.
Jimmy,
we had a little tight in our playroom, and my mom would call this me and she'd be like, can't you just let him win once? And I was like, in the same way, but our best memories playing one-on-one on a little tight soup. I mean, it was awesome.
By the way, I'm going to go back to your dad a second here. Jimmy, I'm going to let you answer first. Was he a lousy ref?
The worst. Terrible.
Yeah, he wanted both players to be happy. It didn't matter what it was. He tried to, you know, help me out a little here and there, but sometimes he wouldn't even be watching. He'd be on his phone or something.
Yeah, let me. If it helps you out any, my dear old dad, Billy Packer, he was a lousy ref too. Anytime he tried to be neutral, it was a total disaster. I mean, just you knew he would have biases. He'd like to bring one up, tear one down. But, you know, I totally with you on that. So that was an honest answer. Because if you'd have said, no, my dad was a great ref, I was going to call BS on both of you. Both of you.
We'll be honest about that. We'll be honest about that.
Now, by the way, go ahead, Jordan.
Buddy, I'll start with you, and I'm curious Jimmy's answer on this one, too. Your guys' whole lives have been spent with your father being a legend on the sideline, still is more in front of him there at Syracuse. Start with you, Buddy. What was your favorite memory around the program coming up that maybe you and Jimmy both shared, or just one for you sitting there watching Dad do his thing?
Man, the Final Four is definitely up there when we came back and beat Virginia. That was just an incredible moment in 2016. He was so happy. Personally, though, also I got to go to the 6 overtime game when I was about 9 or 10, and that was the best game ever. That I got to actually go on that because I was the best kid that year, so that was my trip. And that was just the best game ever. John Glenn, Eric Dean, Paul Harris, that team, incredible to watch, and that's the best game I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I was at the 2003 championship game. I don't remember it too well, unfortunately. So, you know, to my memory, probably making the Final Four in 2013, beating Indiana and then Marquette. I was there going on the court after. It was a really, really good memory for me. So that's probably up there for me.
Very cool. By the way,
hey, Pack, did you pick up on Buddy was the best kid that year?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, I feel like Coach maybe, like, whoever the best kid is this year, like, it's year to year, regular season wins and losses. I love that.
You know,
that's great.
That's called smart parenting. Smart parenting is what that's called. That's how that works.
I'm going to jot that one down with a 7-week-old at home.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Before we let you guys go, obviously last week, the news that Mike Krzyzewski was going to retire at the end of the 21-22 season really captured everybody, not only in the college basketball world, but sports in general. The relationship Coach K's had with your dad goes way, way back. I'm just curious from a player's perspective. And I know you're worried about Syracuse. That's priority one. But, Buddy, I'll lead with you since you've had some experience in the league. That news with Coach K and that relationship with your family, how did that hit you last week?
It was crazy to see just because ever since I was, you know, 9 or 10 years old, I've been around Coach K at the Olympics and seeing what he does. He's, you know, one of the best coaches of all time. Got really close with his family. He has a great family. He's a great leader, great person. And just to grow up around that, both of them, and see their relationship was tough. And just the whole ACC, you know, he has such a big impact on it. And I don't think you can talk about the ACC without talking about Duke and Coach K's success in that league. And it will be hard to replace him, but he's laid a great foundation, and he'll be missed a lot. And I'm looking forward to competing against him one more time. It's always an honor to share the court with, you know, both of those coaches at the same time.
Jimmy, how about you?
Yeah, like Buddy said, just getting to know him and his family at the Olympics has been really special. And like Buddy said, I mean, one of the greatest ever. I'm really glad that he's sticking around for one more year so I get to go up against him. That'll be something that's really cool, something that I'll get to tell my kids and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, just really cool to see him and my dad's relationship grow and all that. And just, yeah, really excited.
Well, listen, Jimmy, despite the late start, I think you've passed the audition. And we look forward to having both you guys on. I don't know if it'll be together. If you two can get along, we'll put you on together. But we look forward to watching you playing together, because it's going to be a really, really cool story this upcoming basketball season. Can't wait.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. I can't wait.
Thank you guys for having us.
And I'd love to add really quick. I lost my brother to a heart attack about 5 years ago. He played at Butler. I played at Notre Dame. And the times we shared on a court were some of the most magical. So for you guys, be the class acts that you both are, with the beautiful family that you guys come from, what you meant to the sport. For somebody like me, who's a Notre Dame guy, got my tail kicked by your dad's team several times when Melo was there, but I've always rooted for the magic on the sidelines that he creates, to have that family atmosphere there with you two representing. It's a cool story that all of us are going to get behind, and I'm cheering for you guys. Jimmy, I hope you outscore Buddy a few times. Buddy, I hope you outscore Jimmy a few times, and I hope you guys win a lot of games together as a family. It's a beautiful thing. Cherish it. You'll never forget this year ahead of you guys.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I will.
It means a lot.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it, man. Guys. You got it. Even the dogs like it. Even Chester and Fuller are barking. They're pro Boeheim boys on that deal. That's a good deal.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
I'm going to be having a yard sale at home, and especially for those who like SU apparel, mostly extra large and some double X stuff's going in there. A lot of throwback stuff. You know, new and used. So I'll announce a date later, but love to have you. I'm so scared to go in my office and try to clean up my office and bring things home, because I've already got 46 years of stuff at home, and it seems like there's even just as much at home as there is in the office. So I'll keep you updated on the dates on that.
John Desco yard sale. It could be some stuff for the basement. Sorry to see him leave, man. He is a great, great coach. He's had an incredible run. And Syracuse is a place where lacrosse matters. They've had great tradition, great history, championships, and they want to get back to that level. So certainly changing times in the league, Jordan, right? I mean, Roy Williams, Coach K, Larry Penley at Clemson and Goff, and now John Desco. These are all legendary, legendary coaches.
Yeah, and for those who are unaware, I mean, Syracuse lacrosse is a big, 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 big deal. Yep. I mean, it was at one point a revenue sport up there in Syracuse. That's the kind of eyes and attention given to the sport up there for the Orange. I mean, everybody I've talked to, I've got a few friends that are alum, a couple guys that have won a few national championships there in the early 2000s, and they talked with such reverence about John Desco. Even one of our colleagues, Paul Carcaterra, we had him on All ACC a few days ago, and he went long talking about him because he had so many emotions that he wanted to share and convey about this class act. He meant a lot to a lot of people, and he still will in his time leaving. No surprise to see him win with class, at times lose with class, and even exit with class. Really cool to see.
No doubt. By the way, Coach Desco also had a funny story about some of his superstitions on the sidelines and when they changed.
I remember I was always superstitious about wearing, whatever it was, a pair of shoes or shirt or something. And their sophomore year, I had no superstitions. I just wore whatever I wanted to every day because I knew we were going to win. And I didn't have to worry about that kind of stuff.
Well, that's when you know life is good. When there are, doesn't, hey, wear whatever you want because we're going to get the W. That and again, Syracuse wants to get back to that level in which, guess what, we're the daddies. But in this league right now, man, you better bring your A game because the conference is loaded, both the men and the women's side. There's also a story yesterday in the press conference where Coach went on that why the time right now was the right time.
You know, and we talked about my family and Cindy and all the weekends away. Summertime, you're on the road all the time. And I'm even appreciating it every day more, the time that I've had to think about it and just to be able to be with the family and home. I love to go to the lake in the summertime, so it'll be nice to do that. I've already been out there and got some projects going on, and actually walking around my own house, I'm looking going, geez, that needs to be fixed and that needs to be painted. So I'm appreciating it more every day. And I've talked with Gary Gate a few times now, and he has stressed that he'd like me around the team, you know, not in a coaching way, but he thinks it would be healthy for me to stay in contact with the guys, and I'd be happy to come to practice and point out what everybody's doing wrong. You know, with the amount of time that I've been here, I'm going to support Syracuse and Syracuse lacrosse all the way. Anything that I can do, I will help. You know, whether it's be advice, maybe some fundraising. Yeah, I think it's a good time. I've had a lot of conversations with people, and that's helped me come to that decision.
Well, we wish Coach the best. He's been terrific with us here on Packer and Durham. And again, Syracuse lacrosse is a big deal. This is a huge story this week, and people are talking about it. And again, he's been great for the sport. And hey, hopefully he gets all those paint jobs and up the lake house and all that cool stuff knocked out. But he'll still be tied into it. Jordan, you know, coaches are always coaches.
Always coaches. And I'll tell you, it's rare for a legend to leave and be replaced by a GOAT. I mean, Gary Gate, in basketball, kids grew up wearing number 23 for Michael Jordan. Kids grew up wearing number 22 for Gary Gate in the sport of lacrosse. So his name will ring bells, much like John Desco did. That foundation has been set. It's strong. And Gary can now take it and enhance it a little bit off the back of what John Desco's done over 46 years. So they'll start to bring in a ton more talent, and they'll be right back. And it's a class move from Gate, understanding that Desco is the sport up there in Syracuse, and he needs him to be around the program. Love to see the synergy there.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.